This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
They spent almost an hour trying to get in, but they didn't succeed. But according to the military spokesperson who gave the information, they also tried to get to other officials.
That's VOA French to Africa reporter Eddie Isango, who says about 50 people accused of attempting a coup in the Democratic Republic of Congo made a court appearance today. Also, the number of internally displaced people in Sudan is estimated to top 10 million soon. And Somalia has been elected to the UN Security Council for the first time in more than 50 years. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, about 50 people, including a few Americans, went on trial today over what the army has called an attempted coup on May 19th. VOA French to Africa reporter Eddie Isango gives us this update, beginning with where the hearing is taking place.
The trial is taking place in Kinshasa, Carol. It is in a military prison. It's also a sort of camp where those people, over 50 people, have been detained since they were transferred from the security service detention.
If you can, just kind of walk us through what happened on May 19th in the capital, Kinshasa.
Yes, all started during the night. Some people, I think it's about 30 or more, they start by attacking the residence of a former Minister of Economy who is now the chairman of the National Assembly. So they spent almost an hour trying to get in, but they didn't succeed. But according to the military spokesperson who gave the information, they also tried to get to other officials like the Vice Prime Minister, Minister of Defense, but they went there, he wasn't home. Then they were trying to get to the Prime Minister residency, but they didn't know where it was located. Then after that, they went and get to the National Palace that serves for the office of the presidency of the President of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Felix Tshisekedi.
So kind of like they got to that outer perimeter of the palace grounds, you're saying, and that's about as far as they got.
Yes, but all those is located at the same outer, a very secured area. But astonishingly, they succeeded to enter to the presidency. It's pretty simple. But I will have to specify that when they were exchanging fire at the residence of former Minister of Economy, the current chairman, they killed two policemen.
There was this shootout. Can you tell us about the man who allegedly led this plot, Christian Mlanga, I believe, and what happened to him?
According to the army spokesperson with whom I have an interview, the guy was shot dead during the operation. But it said that the side of the Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, that he is an American. But we know that the State Department said that there is no proof saying that he is an American. But what we know is that he was living here in the United States. Christian Mlanga is 41, and he was a businessman and traveling sometimes in Africa. But according to the military, he was with some other nationalities, like three others, Americans and two British nationalized Americans.
What are the charges that these men are facing, including Christian Mlanga's son?
They are accused of plot against the regime, of attempt of killing, assassination of the president, of financing terrorism, and many others. And today, at the beginning, at the opening of the trial, the judge, says that they're facing death penalty.
That is VOA French to Africa reporter Eddie Isango. He was speaking with me earlier today here in Washington. The International Organization for Migration warns the number of internally displaced people in Sudan will soon top 10 million as conflict and acute hunger spread throughout the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Mohamed Rafat is chief of mission for the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, in Sudan. He calls the crisis unfolding a catastrophic human tragedy. He tells journalists in Geneva that he is speaking from Port Sudan with a heavy heart and a profound sense of urgency.
Today, I'm not just a representative of a UN agency. I'm a voice for millions of Sudanese whose lives have been forever altered by the ongoing crisis. Families have been torn apart, communities devastated, and the future put on hold. The human toll of this crisis is huge.
Rafat says more than half of the 9.9 million internally displaced are women, and over a quarter are children. In addition, more than 2 million people have fled as refugees into neighboring countries, mainly to Chad, South Sudan, and Egypt. He says displacement was largely concentrated within Darfur and Kordofan states before the rival generals of the Sudanese Armed Forces and paramilitary rapid support forces went to war in mid-April 2023. Since then, he says, displacement has spread across all 18 states, with the majority, 36%, from the capital, Khartoum. He says 70% of people uprooted from their homes are trying to survive in areas at risk of famine. He says most of these areas are in the Darfur region, where they are almost completely cut off from humanitarian aid.
The humanitarian situation has entered a new, alarming chapter, with the outbreak of fights in Al-Fashir, the capital of North Darfur, putting over 800,000 civilians at risk. Movement restrictions are shocking the lifeline of those in the state, with crucial roads out of Al-Fashir blocked and preventing civilians from reaching safer areas, limiting the amount of food and humanitarian aid coming into the city.
Rafat says the prices of food, water, and fuel are skyrocketing, making these essential goods unaffordable. He says aid agencies are struggling to keep pace with the growing needs at a time when international funding is seriously lacking. He notes IOM's $312.5 million appeal to provide aid for 1.7 million people this year is only 19% funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An Egyptian appeals court upheld a one-year sentence for opposition politician Ahmed El-Tantawi, who was then arrested inside the courthouse. Tantawi, who had hoped to run against President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi in elections last year, was found guilty of election campaign irregularities in February. The former lawmaker was also barred from running in parliamentary elections for 5 years. Mohamed Anwar el-Sadat, president of the opposition party of Reform and Development, and a colleague of Tantawi's, discussed the sentence with VOA senior analyst Mohamed el-Shenawi.
This was expected. Ahmed Tantawi, who is a close friend, he was taking a bit tough position when he was in the parliament, and we were together at that time. So he was really representing those who speak the truth as an independent parliamentarian. So it was very obvious that the regime was not happy with his performance or attitude. So when he announced that he is going to run for the last presidential election, and there has been a lot who have been surrounding him from the new generations, whom they see him as a hope for a better future. That was somehow representing, I wouldn't say a real threat to the regime or to Sisi, but they were trying to avoid having a kind of confrontation with those youngsters in the streets if he succeeded in being a candidate. So they make his life difficult when he was trying to get these authorizations from his supporters according to the procedure of the election commissions. But Tantawi definitely is patriot, sincere, and he does not deserve this sentence he got.
Tantawi had accused authorities of hampering his effort to collect the endorsements required to run the presidential election under various pretexts, including computer malfunctions. And Tantawi instead asked his supporters to fill out unofficial popular endorsement forms tactic the authorities labeled as a fraud. Why did your party ask President Sisi to pardon Tantawi?
As a colleague, Tantawi deserved this kind of pardon, which we have been asking the president for, because we know that even if he will make another appeal or if he go to the cassation court, it will take time. So to avoid this, the only way is that the president will have to show some tolerance, especially that he is calling for what they say, the national dialogue, opening up, giving chances for the opposition with more civic and political space. So I believe they should really consider giving him the pardon and giving him the chance that he can run for the coming parliamentary elections in a year and a half time. Because in the sentence, it was also indicated that he should not be allowed to practice his political rights for 5 years, which is not fair. So I hope by collecting signatures from different politicians, intellectuals, and presented to President Sisi that he can reconsider the sentence and give him this pardon.
That was Mohamed Anwar el-Sadat, president of the opposition Party of Reform and Development, speaking with my colleague Mohamed el-Shenawi. The online Egyptian news site Mada Masr said last February that Tantawi and his campaign manager, Mohamed Abu al-Diyar, were convicted of inciting others to influence the conduct of the electoral process by distributing electoral papers without the permission of electoral authorities. 21 other members of Tantawi's campaign were convicted of printing and circulating electoral papers without permission. The case was opened after Tantawi called on supporters to fill out popular endorsement forms for his presidential bid last October, given what he said were restrictions they faced in registering their endorsements at public notary offices. The Egypt Today news site said investigators found more than 500 forged endorsement papers. Egypt Today reports the Interior Ministry said it would take action against those who violate the National Elections Authority's regulations. The United Nations General Assembly elected Somalia for the first time in more than 50 years to the 15-member UN Security Council yesterday for a 2-year term starting in 2025. The Horn of Africa nation was among 5 countries elected to the council, alongside Denmark, Greece, Pakistan, and Panama. They will replace Ecuador, Japan, Malta, Mozambique, and Switzerland, whose terms end on December 31st. They will join existing non-permanent members Algeria, Guyana, the Republic of Korea, Sierra Leone, and Slovenia, whose terms started in January. The Security Council's 5 permanent veto-wielding members are Britain, China, France, Russia, and the United States. You are listening to African News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please visit our website, voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Informal food markets are vital sources of affordable food and income for millions in Africa. With that in mind, the African Union and the International Livestock Research Institute are teaming up to design the first guidelines to help African governments improve food safety in these markets. Mohamed Youssef reports.
An estimated 70% of Africa's urban households buy food from informal sources, such as street vendors, kiosks, and traditional market sellers, recent studies have found. Now, the African Union and the International Livestock Research Institute, or ILRI, are joining forces to produce a framework for addressing the challenges facing the continent's informal food sector. Starting Friday, these new guidelines will aim to help African governments engage with and improve regulatory oversight of this vast market. Silvia Alonso is an epidemiologist at the Institute. She says improving food safety in the informal markets will help better the health of the people and the country's economies.
A large portion of those informal markets have been rather neglected. So we felt that is a gap area that we need to start paying attention to. If we address food safety in informal markets, we are not only contributing to improving food safety across the continent, but also indirectly, we will help with other outcomes and objectives, such as nutrition security, access to jobs, decent work, equitable food systems.
The World Bank has reported that unhealthy practices in the informal markets cost African governments an estimated $16 billion in productivity losses annually. Contaminated foods cause at least 91 million illnesses and 137,000 deaths each year. According to the World Health Organization, the ILRI has embarked on training informal market food handlers and producers in Ethiopia, Kenya and Tanzania. Cecilia Chepkemoi is a milk vendor in Eldoret in the Rift Valley region. She is one of hundreds of people trained in her area. Chepkemoi says she had very little knowledge of how to keep milk safe for consumption.
I only knew how it was about boiling the milk, not about the hygiene of the milk. So after I went to the training with the ILRI, I now wash the cans with warm water and I put the can outside to dry in the sun. And then after that, that is when I pour the milk inside.
Alonso says working with governments and food handlers and producers is critical in keeping consumers healthy.
Our expectation is the guidelines will enable governments support the informal sector to operate within expected parameters and requirements. So this can go from ensuring it's not contaminated with biological substances, with bacteria, with viruses, but also that is wholesome in the sense of not carrying chemicals.
African governments have destroyed and confiscated food items in the markets to deal with outbreaks of diseases like typhoid and cholera. Experts say such forcible shutdowns are counterproductive. The three-month ILRI training has made Chepkemoi increase her sales and build good customer relationships.
It has given me confidence and also it has increased the sale because the rate of which the milk, the customers are buying milk from me, it has gone high and they have gained confidence from me because you find I even get orders from Nairobi. Even if I tell them I don't have the milk right now, you just wait until tomorrow, they'll not go to another person. They will wait.
The consultation process on food safety in informal settings with member states will continue throughout 2024 and 2025. The document will be presented to African Union policy-making bodies for approval next year. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump faces the prospect of prison time after a New York jury convicted him of falsifying business records in a hush money trial. The legal process casts uncertainty on his campaign and future election chances. Tina Trin reports from New York.
Donald Trump was found guilty of falsifying business records as part of a conspiracy to suppress damaging information ahead of his 2016 election. Convicted during this presidential campaign, the ruling raises questions as to how Trump will continue that campaign if he's sent to prison. Former federal prosecutor Stephen Cohen does not expect Trump will be incarcerated soon.
There will be intense post-trial motions and then there will be an appeal. And that appeal will take months, if not more than a year. So I think much of this will feed the political drama more than it will feed the story, at least initially, of Donald Trump's fate as a consequence of this conviction.
Trump's sentencing is set for July 11th. Legal experts say the length of any prison term would likely be far less than the charge's 20-year maximum. Joseph Tully is a criminal defense attorney.
Given his age, given his lack of criminal history, and given that the result here really speaks for itself, that he's actually not looking at a lot of punishment, very significant punishment.
Others point to the prison time already served by Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, as precedent for Trump's sentencing. Defense attorney Abby Smith teaches at Georgetown Law School.
It's very rare for an underling in a conspiracy to get jail time and the kingpin not. Donald Trump was at the top of this criminal conspiracy, and Michael Cohen did some serious jail time. He spent months. So there is some precedent for a judge sentencing Mr. Trump to jail.
Alternatives to prison include probation, house arrest, and fines. But it's most likely that any sentence won't be carried out until after the appeals process, which is liable to go past Election Day in November. Whatever sentence materializes next month, it'll inform sentencing for the three criminal cases that are still pending against Trump. Preet Bharara is a former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York.
The fact of this conviction here, if it's still on the books, would result in a potential higher prison sentence in those future cases. So it does have a consequence because he will now, unlike a week ago, have a criminal record, and criminal records are taken into account in meting out punishment.
Of the other federal and state charges Trump is facing, the Florida trial for those involving mishandling of classified documents is further delayed. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Legal scholars have said nothing in the U.S. Constitution or federal election law would bar someone convicted of a crime from running for election and even serving in office. Well, you know what that music means. It's time for sports, and I have our VOA sports analyst, Mukbil Yarborough, here in the studio with me. Thanks for being on the show, Mukbil.
Thanks for having me, Carol.
So, the NBA Finals kicked off last night between the Boston Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks. What happened?
Yeah, the Boston Celtics were able to get the job done at home, winning over the Dallas Mavericks 107-89.
Whoa, blowout.
It was a blowout of epic proportions. I don't think anybody really had expected it to start off like that because the NBA playoffs this year has been very, very competitive. But that just really goes to show you how strong and how dominating the Boston Celtics could be. I'm expecting the Dallas Mavericks to come out game two with a completely different mentality, different game plan. They have a Hall of Famer, Jason Kidd, as their head coach, who is a brilliant basketball mind. So I'm sure he's going to go there, study some film, and figure out what it is that he can do to try to slow this team down. If we're just looking at some stats, Carol, Kristaps Porzingis with 20 points in 20 minutes of play.
Get out.
He really showcased that he is the X factor in this series. He has been injured, so I don't think the Dallas Mavericks really thought that he was going to be able to do this. He comes out in his first game in a really long time for this team and looks like he has not missed a step.
So they may have underestimated him.
Absolutely. They may not even have expected him to be able to play. So can he keep up this momentum as well? You know, we've seen seven-footers with injuries be a little bit more cautious in their first games back. So showing that 20 minutes, he was still on limited minutes, but he was very efficient. Jaylen Brown with a team high of 22 points. Jason Tatum also added another 16. So this was like an all-around like team win for the guys. Whereas on the Dallas Mavericks side, Luka Doncic put up 30 points, was the only one that had anything above 15. PJ Washington with 14 and Kyrie with only 12 points. So I don't expect Kyrie to have a subpar game like that in game two. I'm looking to see him put up 25 or 30. So it'll be some adjustments.
Moving on, what about T20 Cricket World Cup? Has been nothing short of exciting. Team USA shocked the cricket world. Can you tell us about that?
Woo! Exciting! You know, here in the U.S., we are not as privy to the game of cricket as maybe some of the rest of the world. But man, oh man, was it a shocker. The U.S. team, who is currently ranked, if I'm not mistaken, I believe we are ranked somewhere in the, I believe, 18th in the world, shocked the world by beating Pakistan, the world number 6 ranked team, by 5 runs. So what a win. And this is also the first World Cup where America is co-hosting with the West Indies. So huge win for the U.S. This could potentially be something that we see, that the sport is growing in our country. So I'm excited to see what happens beyond this, but fantastic win for the guys.
Yeah, maybe that is, setting it up for more cricket fans around the country, maybe the world.
I'm excited. USA cricket. Let's go.
Thanks. That's VOA sports analyst Mukbil Yarborough you just heard. And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Tian Wang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. Bye-bye.